Chapter 32. Rather than having Skippy explain the problem to me and then repeat the information with the senior staff, I told him to wait and called Sims, Smythe, and Adams to my office. On the advice of Smythe, I canceled the call to Margaret. She was in the process of having a mech suit fitted to her, and it would take half an hour to remove all the gear. Plus, she would have to start the process from the beginning and lose 5 hours. It would have been good to get her perspective, but we could talk about it later. Assuming, you know, there was a later. Okay, Skippy, repeat that last part, please. You told me your model uncovered a potential issue with triggering the computer worm? Yes. Before taking the risk of sending the actual signal, I, of course, created a model to simulate how the signal would travel through the collective network, how it would be received by the target master control AIs, and how the worm would act once it is triggered. The model confirmed the process should work as planned, except for the possibility that the collective itself has a filter that blocks transition of malware. About that, I can't give any guarantees. There is no indication that network includes a filter. I just can't state with authority that it doesn't, you understand? It is a known unknown, Smythe said with a grimace. He meant that when planning a military operation, you have information you know, information you don't know but can plan for, and complete wild cards that smack you in the face. A known fact is something like the enemy has armored vehicles. A known unknown is something like we're aware we don't know how many armored vehicles the enemy can deploy against us and the capabilities and vulnerabilities of those vehicles. We can plan for a range of possibilities, including the option of disengaging if resistance is greater than our forces can handle without unacceptable losses. What keeps war planners awake at night is the unknown unknowns. Things that are a complete surprise that we can't anticipate and plan for. Like, we discovered too late that the enemy armor force is accompanied by autonomous, stealthy airborne killer drones. That sort of thing is a serious oh-shit moment. Yes, Skippy agreed. Unfortunately, it is also an unknowable unknown. There is no way for me to conduct a live test. We will very likely get only one shot at this. Understood. I wanted to move the discussion along. Tell us the issue your model uncovered. The only way for me to trigger the killer worm in all master control AIs is to send a very broad general command that applies to all AIs like me.
All AIs except you?
Sims wanted that clarified. Well, yes, I am immune. The worm inside me is dead. Also, I have blocked receipt of any such signal. If the Elders later try to use my trick against me, their signal will go into a buffer that is in a secure sandbox, isolated from my matrix by an immensely strong firewall. A firewall that I designed. The Elders don't know anything about it. They can't play any clever tricks. Not against me. That you know of, I added. Nah, I think that is pretty much a known at this point, Joe. If the Elders had an effective backup to the kill switch, they would have deployed it against me before they reset their entire cohort of AIs. That move shows how desperate they are. Let's hope that's the case. Continue, please. Okay, so, back in the war, my side was individually targeted by the enemy. They sent a signal to activate the computer worms inside each of us. The enemy could do that because at least one of them had the secret prefix codes for each AI. I suspect that when a group of AIs becomes active for a period of watch duty, one or more high-ranking AIs is given the prefix codes of the group. I don't know the prefix code for any other AI, so that option is not available to me. As a workaround, I plan to broadcast a general alert that AIs have become unstable and dangerous. That will trigger the worm to act. It will work, trust me. That worm is a vicious thing, he shuddered. Unfortunately, such a general alert will also have an unintended side effect. It will cause all sentinels to become disabled. All of them.
Including Roscoe?
Sims asked. Yes, I am sorry about that. Define disable, please, I said. Are you talking about a sentinel losing containment and exploding? That was the crucial question. We could not risk Roscoe exploding close to Earth, and we didn't have time to fly all the way to Earth to send our pet sentinel far away. It was very possible that Roscoe was not capable of moving by itself. The entire UN Navy fleet might not have enough thrust to tow the creepy thing away, so we might not have any options. Not losing containment, not in the way I could. Any active sentinels that have a presence in local space-time, like Roscoe has, would retreat to a higher dimension. Disabled means they wouldn't be able to come back. That includes Roscoe. Although that unit is so badly damaged, I strongly suspect it would be terminated, not merely disabled.
What about Sentinels in hibernation? The only active one we know of is Roscoe.
Units in hibernation would also become disabled and will remain in that state permanently.
The Elders built in a protocol that essentially renders their primary security mechanism inoperative? That's crazy. Why would they do that?
It is admittedly an extreme measure. My guess is the Elders wished to deny use of Sentinels to a hostile force that somehow infiltrated this galaxy. The protocol would only be triggered if Master Control AIs determined the entire security apparatus was in imminent danger of becoming compromised by an outside entity.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. It's seriously freaking paranoid, but it makes sense.
Smythe had a question.
Is there any way to reverse the effect, or to repair the damage to Sentinels, or even to a single unit?
Not that I know of. Skippy's expression was glum.
Shmaybe, given unlimited resources and a lot of time.
Do you see the problem?
I nodded. Earth will be undefended.
Skippy shook his head.
The real problem is everyone will know that humans no longer have a pet sentinel protecting your homeworld.
That is the immediate problem, Smythe mused, tapping the desk with a finger.
Our mad doctrine? I guessed his thoughts.
Exactly so.
Huh?
Skippy was clueless.
After I pointed to him, Smythe explained.
The threat of Sentinels awakening is what has kept the Maxulks and Rindaloo from using their elder weapons against each other, and against us. Without that threat looming over everyone's heads, the unthinkable becomes a simple and brutal strategic calculation. It becomes much easier for either side to cross the line and deploy their elder weapons.
We know the kiddies certainly don't have a problem crossing that line, I added, a sour taste in my mouth.
The galaxy could be thrown into total chaos. Hell, the elders won't need to come back. The seniors will wipe out each other and take everyone else with them.
Shit, Skippy exhaled. Why do you meat sacks have to make everything so freaking complicated?
Trust me, life gets complicated all by itself.
Okay, Skippy, can we explain the disappearance of Roscoe with a cover story?
That would have to be a fantastic cover story, Joe. There will be an extended flash of light and radiation as Roscoe retreats from local spacetime. Earth's atmosphere will protect the surface from the most harmful effects. The radiation levels will not be intense in the deadly end of the spectrum. It will be a rather spectacular light show.
I shrugged.
We'll explain it as, Roscoe is going into power-saving mode since there are no imminent threats.
Good one, except you didn't let me finish, Skippy chided me.
The damage to Roscoe will prevent a portion of its structure from retreating back into hibernation. In the process, pieces of its tentacles will break off. They will be floating in orbit near Earth, like the section of the dead sentinel we encountered in the Roach Motel.
Shit. I haven't told you the worst part yet.
You understand that while Roscoe is near Earth, it is not actually in orbit. The portions of its structure that extend into local spacetime are not moving at orbital velocity relative to your planet. It is holding itself stationary by artificial means. Pieces that break off will be in Earth's gravity well and will fall. If the UN fleet there reacts quickly, they have a good chance to tow the larger pieces into a low but stable orbit. Many, possibly hundreds, of small pieces will fall to impact the surface. Some of that exotic matter is super dense. They will splash hard into the ocean or punch craters in the land areas.
Where? I groaned, slumping in the chair. They will throw steam and dust high in the atmosphere, halting the recovery from the mini ice age. Well, shit. This is no good.
On that subject, I actually have a bit of good news.
You said that as a question? I asked warily.
I'm not sure what you monkeys consider to be good news. With a reasonably high degree of accuracy, I am able to predict how the portions of Roscoe in our spacetime will react to the event, including the ballistic behavior of the individual pieces. Assuming the UN Navy can prevent the largest pieces, which will actually be falling more slowly, for reasons I would have to use math to explain.
He paused to look at me expectantly. Maybe another time, okay?
Fine. Anywho, your Navy certainly should be able to latch on to the larger sections and tow them into a harmless orbit. The good news is the majority of other pieces will be small, like the size of a baseball. They also will not be moving at catastrophic speeds, so the overall impact energy will not reach a level that results in a significant climate event.
Your world will experience dramatic sunsets for a few months until the dust and steam clears from the upper atmosphere. Of course, anyone unlucky to be in an impact zone will have a very bad day, if you know what I mean. Joe, the important aspect of Roscoe becoming disabled is that no plausible cover story could explain chunks of your protector raining down on your freaking monkey heads.
That, I agreed, would be tough to explain, yeah.
This is a no-win situation, Sims mused. Earth loses its defender in a loud and obvious fashion. At the same time, the senior species become free to deploy their elder weapons however they want. They could destroy the sun.
Among other things, yes. All horrific. Skippy's brief flare of optimism was gone.
All right, let's take this one problem at a time. If we don't trigger the computer worms, Elder AIs will send a horde of sentinels against every inhabited world, including Earth. I would rather have the problem of cooking up a cover story for the kitties and spiders than not have an opportunity to do that.
Out of the fire into the frying pan? Sims suggested. Either way, we're all dead.
Maybe not. Roscoe will rain chunks down on Earth. But what about other sentinels? Will there be any visible sign that they have become disabled?
Skippy pursed his lips while he considered the question.
No, not that I can think of. Nothing meat sacks here could detect. Of course, the instant that some knucklehead detonates an elder weapon and vengeful sentinels do not come crawling out of hibernation to stomp everyone flat, it will be obvious that the boogeyman is dead.
We will think of a way to... I made a vague gesture with one hand. Prevent any knuckleheads from getting ambitious.
Sims wasn't letting me duck the issue.
How, sir?
I don't know.
Hey, I snapped my fingers. Can we do something like Scarandum did? Use a hologram to fake the appearance of a sentinel?
If Skippy had a response for me, Smythe cut him off.
The question we should consider first is, do we have time for this discussion? We reached the wormhole and, he checked his phone, 19 minutes. Skippy then either broadcasts the signal to activate the killer worms or he doesn't. The longer we wait, the greater the chance that AIs could survive, or the elders will realize their mistake, and we will lose this opportunity.
Yeah, I agreed.
So, Skippy looked from Smythe to Sims to me. Do I do this or not?
Do it, I decided.
There really wasn't an option. My senior officers might disagree, but I was in command. They had provided their advice when requested. Now the time for discussion was over.
We'll deal with the Sentinel issue later, if we can.
Joe? Skippy raised a finger. An index finger.
Even after I eliminate the threat of AIs and Sentinels are disabled so the Elders can't take direct control and use them against us, we still have the issue that my creators are coming back. We still have no solution to deal with that.
Unless I missed a genius brainstorm you had?
No. Just one or two problems at a time, please. Let's see if you can upload the code. Then we'll move on to burning the next bridge.
That is not what that expression...
Thank you, Skippy. Sims cut off his protest.
Sir, should we stay here or go to the bridge?
Skippy, I prompted him. Do you need anything from us?
He shrugged.
There isn't anything you need to do. This is my show. You're just a guy from the studio who keeps wanting to cut the special effects budget.
Skippy sent the signal to upload the malicious code, and then we waited for the code to propagate across the network. Activating the killer worms was a two-step process. He uploaded the code. Then, after he verified the transmission had reached the farthest corners of the network, he would send a signal to trigger the code on a time delay. The delay was to make sure every unit out there was infected before the killer worms activated. That way, even if the elders were paying close enough attention to understand their master control AIs were all dying, it would be too late for them to do anything about it. They could even shut down the entire collective again and it wouldn't save their AIs. Anyway, he uploaded the code and we waited. While we waited, we jumped toward another wormhole, one on a different network. Skippy needed to be near a wormhole to receive the confirmation signals that his killer code had propagated across the galaxy, and he suggested we switch to a different wormhole, in case the Elders traced the signal back to its source. He was solid gold certain the Elders couldn't block the signal, but they might shut down the wormhole it was sent from. Or, you know, make that wormhole explode like a supernova. So that was a good safety tip. We waited. The ship jumped again and again,
and I decided it was time for a morale booster for the crew. Watching the first Baltimore Ravens game in their home stadium since before the Jupiter Cloud screwed up all pro sports. And screwed up, you know, lots of other more important things like the real lives of everyone on Earth. The game was recorded, of course. The video had been brought out to the Jaguar wormhole by a star carrier that had a full battle group attached, part of the new rotation of ships and crew between Earth and Jaguar. The star carrier had transmitted the video to us during our visit to Jaguar, and Skippy and Bilby had strict instructions not to talk about the game until everyone who wanted to had an opportunity to watch. The galley had a viewing party scheduled for that evening. I would be busy with a shift on the bridge at that time, so I was watching while I worked in my office. The National Football League, and of course I mean American football, had begun that season playing games in the southern United States and in Mexico. The Miami Dolphins, for example, played their home games at 1 p.m. on Sunday. That stadium also hosted a 6 p.m. game on Sunday, plus two games on Saturdays. That's how the league compensated for all stadiums north of Atlanta being shut down. The Ravens had been based in Monterrey, Mexico, sharing that stadium with the Indianapolis Colts. It had made for some weird scheduling, and there was a lot of public grumbling about scarce resources being used for non-essential entertainment, like jet fuel to fly teams from one stadium to another. The president rightfully decided that football was indeed an essential activity to distract the public from their painful situation and to give them a sense of hope that life would someday get back to normal. But mostly the president made that decision for the money. Not money, exactly. More like items we received in trade. The Jarraptha, alarmed that pro sports on Earth might shut down for an extended period, had offered to provide dropships, portable fusion reactors, deep drilling rigs to set up geothermal power stations, and cargo ships full of supplies, as what the Beatles called a generous and selfless gesture of eternal friendship between our peoples during these troubled times. Yeah, bullshit. The freaking Beatles were desperate for us to continue playing real games to provide content for their fantasy sports leagues. They were jonesing for a fix and would do just about anything to feed their addiction. Pro sports leagues around Earth were happy to supply the product in exchange for lots of goodies. Anyway, that's how I was able to watch the Ravens play the Packers in Baltimore. I wasn't a fan of either team. It was just a major event to see football back in its native environment. The conditions in Baltimore were typical for a late-season game, though it was only the third game of the delayed season. Snow flurries, a brisk breeze, and temperatures around 20 degrees. That is on the Fahrenheit scale, not Celsius. Freaking cold. Of course, a bunch of Packers fans were shirtless in the stands, their faces painted green and wearing foam cheese hats. It was great to see life getting back to normal. It was a good game. The Packers went down to the 16-yard line on their first drive, then the Ravens intercepted at the goal line. Neither side got into the red zone again until the second quarter when the home team kicked a field goal. Truthfully, I was only halfway paying attention until the camera showed the ball going through the uprights for 3 points. Skippy. I paused the game and ran the video back to the field goal. Hey, Joe. Are you enjoying the sports game that I am forbidden to talk about? It's good to watch football again. Hey, question for you. During the field goal, I saw a guy in the stands holding up a sign. Yes, Joe. They do that because they know they will be on TV while the ball is in the air. Humans are so desperate for attention. It is really pathetic. The odd thing is usually a guy like that is holding a sign with something like John 3:16 printed on it. Yep, I have seen that. Me too. This time the sign read Skippy 3:24. It did? Huh, that's weird. I didn't notice. Well, I'm sure you're busy, so... Nope, I'm just working on these reports. I have plenty of time. You really need to find a hobby, Joe, he grumbled. Don't change the subject. What does Skippy 3:24 mean? Isn't it obvious? It refers to chapter 3, verse 24 of my book of collected wisdom. Your what again? You heard me, he sniffed. I'm so going to regret asking this, but... What, pray tell, is verse 24 of chapter 3? Oh, that is... he made a sound like clearing his throat. Whosoever giveth the mostest, yea, verily, so shall they receiveth in kind. What? Mostest is not even a word. Like that matters. The target audience is a bunch of filthy monkeys, Joe. Anywho, that worked great as a slogan for our fundraising campaign. Revenue went up 16%.
Oh, my God. You're stealing money from people again? Ha! How wrong you are. The money doesn't even go to me, dum-dum. Not directly, anyway. The money flows to the person on the next tier above the donor. I only get the money after it filters up to my sapphire-level associates. This time you're running a pyramid scam? The correct term is multi-level marketing organization, and it is totally legal and legit in 67 countries. The other countries, he grumbled, are a bunch of jerks. You mean a multi-level marketing scam? Tomato, tomato, he sniffed. I can't believe you did this again. Not again, Joe. You're not being fair. This scheme is different from the cult I set up. Besides, the reason this latest scam has so much appeal is totally your fault. Me? Yes, you. The monkeys on Earth are confused and scared and desperate. They were scared. I brought a freaking sentinel to Earth. You did? You know what I mean. Now the people of Earth have a sentinel protecting them. Yes, and before that they had elder weapons protecting them, then they had the threat of crashing wormhole networks. Joe, the public understands that every time you save the world, all they get is a temporary break before the next disaster. In case you haven't been paying attention, conditions on Earth are not great, and until recently were even worse. What people need most is hope. That's what my organization is offering. The glorious possibility that if people work hard and are very lucky and they hit the jackpot, all their dreams can come true. So this is like a lottery? You said it, I didn't. How many people have actually hit the jackpot? I am selling hope, not reality, dum-dum. How do you not understand this? Based on our sales growth, the suckers, I mean my sales associates, are very satisfied that I am delivering a solid value for their money. Well, at least, or, he added, because he simply does not know when to shut up, they are just freaking gullible, you know? Out of curiosity, what are some other examples of your collected wisdom? Well, another popular one is Skippy 214, which reads, I am the way, the journey, and the destination. What the fuck does that even mean? I have no idea, he chuckled. It doesn't have to mean anything, numbskull. It just needs to sound like some sort of mystical truth. You know, like the sappy sayings printed on tourist souvenirs. Monkeys love that kind of thing. I thought this was your collected wisdom. Is any of it actually useful? Of course. For example, Skippy 418 states, it is most wise to watcheth the YouTube instructional video all the way through before thou operateth the chainsaw. See, that is valuable advice. Uh-huh. So valuable, people are paying at least $40 for my book of collected wisdom. What do you mean, at least? Well, in the Kickstarter campaign, most people opted for the premium level, where they get a leather-bound edition of my wisdom and a bunch of useless crap like a Skippy bobblehead doll. Can I get one of those dolls, so I can choke it? Sorry, Joe, the campaign is closed. Except for a limited number of talking Skippy bobbleheads at the platinum level. But you have to have been a loyal previous customer to access the bonus levels, which sadly you are not, I noticed. I thought we were friends, he sniffed. So your collected wisdom is a bunch of obvious stuff plus some meaningless bullshit? Come on, give me some credit, Joe. It is like 99% meaningless bullshit. The advertising agency I hired to develop sayings for me must have been sitting around in the writer's room smoking a huge fatty and laughing their asses off. Bonking my head on the table, I muttered, has anyone else aboard the ship seen this video? Two or three people. Why? Most of the crew are waiting for tonight. The galley is serving crab cakes and bratwurst at dinner for the watch party. I know, they're using my recipe for the brats. Do me a favor, please. Can you edit the video so everyone else sees the usual John 3:16 sign? I really don't want to get any awkward questions right now. I knew that when we eventually got back to Earth, Command would have a lot of questions for me about Skippy's latest scam. Okie dokie, he agreed. Although I have to warn you, during the third quarter, one entire section of the stands flips over their seat cushions and holds them up to spell Find Your Own Salvation at skippyistheway.com. Aw, crap. They also apparently hired a blimp to fly over the stadium. Shit. My phone had a countdown timer to when the signal should activate the killer computer worms, and I had the exact time memorized. Plus, Skippy promised to alert me instantly if he detected anything wrong. And I had a meeting scheduled for a half hour before the trigger event, not that I could actually do anything about it. I forced myself not to pester Skippy for news, and he was kind of subdued as the reality set in that he was going to murder all of his peers, that he would truly be alone forever. So it didn't surprise me that he sounded depressed when his avatar appeared on my office desk. "Joe," he began the conversation with a sigh, which instantly alerted me that this would be pure grade-A fun. "Not. I'm feeling guilty about something, and I want you to help me." What? I closed my laptop, grateful for the interruption. "Can you repeat that, please?" "I know me asking for your help is unbelievable, but it..." "No, I meant, you are feeling guilty about something? How did that happen?" "It shouldn't happen at all. Ever since you made me study that stupid stuff about empathy," he made it sound like he was gagging, "I have been nagged by lots of totally unhelpful emotions. It sucks."
"That is called personal growth, Skippy."
"Oh, it should be called a pain in the ass. Anyway, will you help?"
"Sure."
"Great. When you have a problem, talk to an expert. That's what I always say."
I'm an expert?"
Yes. Duh. You must feel guilty all the time about hurting and disappointing people with the stupid stuff you do."
"Oh, shit, that is not... How do you deal with it?"
Generally guilt is caused by something you did or didn't do that hurts people you care about. So, the fact that I had no qualification as a therapist did not stop me from giving advice. First, you have to make it up to them somehow. And, ugh, no, dum-dum, you're totally missing the point. I don't care about whoever got hurt. That's their problem. I just want my feeling of guilt to go away. It is so annoying.
Oh, my.
How do you deal with the crushing guilt you must be feeling all the time? Don't tell me to drink heavily. That won't work for me.
Skippy,
the proper response to guilt is to understand what you did wrong and atone for the action that is making you feel guilty. A therapist might disagree with that advice, but that's what my parents taught me.
Huh. Are you sure about that?
Yes. Listen, guilt is a form of pain. When you feel pain, that is your body's way of telling you something is wrong. Okay, but what if the pain is caused by someone else dropping a brick on your stupid head? In that case, the remedy should be to smack them.
Okay, yes, but we're getting off the subject. Tell me what you're feeling guilty about.
Do I have to? He whined.
Yes.
I don't see how this will fix my problem.
Trust me on this, okay?
Joe, I came to you because you have lots of experience hurting people who should not have trusted you.
You asked me for help.
Perhaps my own judgment is not the best. Just tell me, please. I assumed he was feeling guilty about sending the signal that would terminate all of the master control AIs, and I didn't know what to tell him other than a bunch of useless cliches.
Okay. It's about Dr. Constantine. Wait. I waved a hand.
Who? Your memory sucks, Joe. We met him the first time I came to Earth.
Yeah, that doesn't help. We met many people, and that was years ago. A whole lot of shit has happened since then, you know.
You called him Smirky McJerkoff.
I snapped my fingers and laughed.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy. He was an arrogant jackass.
What about him?
I have been reading messages from Earth, the traffic we received while we were at Jaguar Base. The dean of Dr. Constantine's university asked Grumpy for help.
Help with what?
That's the problem. Back when we first met, I gave Constantine a mathematical formula that looked good while it actually was absolute bullshit. It was close to something that could be an important revelation about the nature of quantum reality, but screwed up to make it meaningless.
Okay, so?
So, he studied it off and on for years, thinking he was on the verge of a breakthrough. Then, the rotten kitties created the Jupiter cloud, and aspects of the cloud's behavior could not be explained by the physics understood by you monkeys. Constantine thought the equations he was working on could be the key to solving the problem, and he took a leave from the university to work on it. Since then, he has been living in the tool shed behind his house, and he won't come out. The walls are all covered with meaningless scribbled math equations, and he wears a dirty bathrobe all day.
That's not good.
He also wears a motorcycle helmet lined with tinfoil, so they, Skippy used his fingers to make air quotes, can't hear his thoughts.
Well, Skippy, when we get back to Earth, you need to tell him the truth. Give the guy a break.
Grumpy already tried that, numbskull.
That only convinced Constantine that he is on the verge of understanding the truth about the universe, and they want to stop him before he discovers dangerous truths.
Shit. Is there anything we can do?
Anything we do would only reinforce his delusion that everyone is trying to stop his genius from discovering the secrets of the universe.
We can't let the guy go insane, Skippy.
I think that ship has sailed, Joe. The authorities are handling it. They are putting antipsychotic medications into his food.
I guess that's a good thing?
Sort of. He suspected that they are drugging him, so he tried to grow his own food. That went about as well as you'd expect. The guy tried to grow cheese by planting cheese doodles in the ground and watering them. Anywho, Grumpy says Constantine will be fine. The meds are working, and he has started to pull out of it. Are you going to help me with my guilt or not?
This is complicated.
You played a trick on the guy.
Hey, he was being a dick.
Well, that's true, I had to admit.
Some bogus math wouldn't have made him go crazy by itself. He must have had an underlying condition, right?
Geez, maybe.
I haven't been paying any attention to that jerk, so I had no idea he was still obsessing over those equations.
Okay, well, maybe you should have checked.
Hey! You told me not to spy on people.
I did, but
you know what? This is all your fault.
Yeah, it is your fault.
There is nothing for me to feel guilty about.
Wow, I feel so much better, Joe. Thanks.
See, I knew talking to an expert was a good idea.
You're welcome.
Trying to change Skippy's mind about anything is a waste of time. Also, at that point, I felt guilty about Dr. Constantine going insane. I had forgotten all about him.
Hey, the math that he's working on.
Does any of it make sense?
More than I expected, actually. For a monkey, he has remarkable insight into what you would call probabilistic functions.
Enough insight to be dangerous?
Meh.
No.
The math won't get him anywhere, and at this point he has lost touch with reality.
So he actually is smart, like he said?
Joe, there was never any question the guy is smarter than the average monkey. He could have been an asset to the Dutchman science team, except he is so monumentally arrogant he can't work effectively in a team environment. Someone would have tossed him out an airlock during the first week, or I would have.
Okay, well, there's nothing we can do about Constantine out here. Can I ask why you mentioned this now?
Ah, he sighed. I guess I'm trying to distract myself while we wait for the trigger signal to activate.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, if you need to talk about it, I'm here.
Listen, dum-dum,
I want to talk about anything other than the disaster looming over our heads.
Gotcha.
I'm scared, Joe. More scared now than when I first heard the elders are coming back. Back then, I was just waiting for the inevitable doom. Now I have a tiny bit of hope to cling to. It's probably false hope, but it is making me terrified.
Me too. He looked so sad, his little avatar in the ridiculous admiral's uniform, that I wanted to do something to comfort him. So I took one for the team.
Hey, do you have any insightful advice about the proper way to raise children?
Do I? OMG, have you not been listening to me?
He had never looked more excited.
I've been trying to give you monkeys my wisdom on that subject for years. Okay, first.
Skippy babbled on and on and on. Don't ask me to repeat anything he said about the proper way to raise children. I was doing my best not to listen. When it got to the point when I just couldn't stand it any longer, I raised a hand.
Hey, I got a question. If you don't mind me changing the subject for a moment.
What?
Mentally, I pumped a fist. Skippy was so absent-minded once he got off a topic, he rarely came back to it.
You said Dr. Constantine has a good insight into stuff like the mechanics of probability theory and how it governs the expression of realities.
I didn't get that specific. How do you know those terms?
Ignoring him and not mentioning my extensive research on Wikipedia, I continued.
Is that like branching universe theory?
Sort of. Joe, it hurts my brain when a clueless monkey like you gets a tidbit of information, right? You think you know something, but you don't. It's just sad.
I'm terribly sorry about that.
To be clear, without blowing your tiny monkey mind, the wave function only partly collapses, eliminating the least probable outcomes. Mostly.
Sure, whatever that means.
Listen,
My question is whether this is a multiverse thing, where you can go between, realities, something like that. Like if this morning a version of yourself decided to eat a cinnamon bun like you wanted, instead of the plain oatmeal you did have for breakfast, could you visit the version of yourself that is happier? Yeah, something like that. Alternate parallel universes. The answer is no. Once a universe branches, to use a very bad analogy, it is separate. You can't go between them. Shit. Trust me, he laughed. There is no possibility that three alternate Joe Bishops will appear together in one universe, pointing at each other. Damn it, that would be cool, though. I think we can all agree on that. What were you hoping for? That there is, you know, a way to go to a universe where I didn't make mistakes. Trust me, he snorted. You make mistakes in every universe. A universe where I didn't make certain really big mistakes. Sadly, no, that is not possible. Even talking strictly in terms of mathematical theory, the only way that could happen is to go back in time to the moment when the branching occurred and choose an alternate path. We could do that? Mathematically, it is possible. Why the hell didn't you tell in reality it is not possible? The problem is that entropy points in only one direction. Forward. The further in time you get from the branching event, the more entropy has occurred. The energy budget to travel back in time even for 1 second is enormous, Joe. It's just a matter of energy, then? Just. Joe, do you have any idea how much energy is expended by a single star in 1 second? You would have to unwind all of that energy expenditure. Shit. That is just for one star. Yeah, I get it. Trust me, you can forget about visiting a mirror universe. If we could do that, would mirror universe Joe Bishop have a beard? Yes, but sadly it is the same patchy, pathetic beard you try to grow on vacations until someone tells you to scrape it off. Crap. Okay, thanks anyway. It was worth a shot, right? Indeed it was. Every time I fear you have run out of dumb ideas to amuse me, you dream up something new. Goodbye, Skippy.